Chris Boyd. Up next on Think, how the pandemic is changing how entertainment gets made. We'll spend the first part of this hour with Variety film and media executive editor Brent Lang talking about how TV and movie studios are scrambling to adjust to new requirements for social distancing on sets, which will affect everything from makeup artist contact with actors to floor and lighting crews being unable to share hand tools. Later in the hour, NPR sports correspondent Tom Goldman will tell us how pro and college sports organizations are gaming out how they can return players to arenas and stadiums and how fans might be allowed in with them. Our conversation starts after a short break. Are not pumping much gas at the moment as millions of us suddenly work from home or find we don't have the opportunity to work at all. We're buying fewer clothes because really, who cares what we wear if we barely leave the house? What we are consuming is a lot of TV. But with production shut down by COVID-19 in many parts of the world, how long will it be before we run out of fresh content? From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. The pandemic has been bad for the entertainment industry. You can't work from home if you're an actor in an ensemble cast. You can't social distance if you earn your living as a makeup artist or a cinematographer. And it might be a really long time before anybody feels confident about enjoying a blockbuster movie in a crowded theater. So how is the industry coping, and how noticeable will newly necessary safety precautions be to audiences? Brent Lang is here to talk about this. He is executive editor of film and media at Variety. Brent, welcome to Think.
Thank you for having me.
Has there ever been an interruption of the entertainment industry on this scale?
No, this is completely unprecedented. I mean, you have to remember that during the Spanish flu in 1917, 1918, it was still very sort of nascent stages of the film business, and that business has become increasingly globalized in the ensuing decades. So it's left it particularly vulnerable to the disruptions caused by COVID.
So what is the situation for production studios? Is anything being shot according to schedule at the moment?
Not very little is being shot right now. There are a few countries that have resumed production, limited production, such as the Czech Republic. But in this country, there's virtually no production taking place right now. And that's a big issue because it means that sooner rather than later, television networks and streaming services and movie studios are going to be running short of fresh content to provide consumers.
Tell us about some of the ways a pandemic can interfere with producing films and TV shows. I mean, we know about social distancing, but there are not a lot of jobs in Hollywood that can be done at a distance, right? Other than maybe writing?
You're right. You could still do a virtual writer's room. There does seem to be some success with animation, with doing that remotely, with doing certain kinds of post-production work like film editing or visual effects remotely. But the bulk of the work, the heart of the work, the heart of the industry is done on sets, and it's jobs from gaffers to lighters to cinematographers to caterers to drivers. All of those people representing tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of jobs have been left unemployed by this epidemic. It's created an unemployment crisis the likes of which the industry has never seen.
And as people are planning for how they could possibly go back, there have been really interesting challenges to solve. One of the things I read about that I would not have thought of is that folks who work on set construction crews, they're accustomed to sharing tools with one another, and everyone now will have to have their own set of hand tools.
Absolutely. I mean, in fact, a film set by its very nature is a very compact place. You're putting a lot of people in there. And when you talk to people who work on these sets, they say that even in good times, even before coronavirus, it was a petri dish for diseases. People were constantly getting sick. And so it's created a lot of headaches for producers and for studios as they come up with novel ways to create safe work environments for people. I mean, they're examining all kinds of very radical ideas that you know would have been unimaginable just a few months ago, from quarantining casts, from insisting that they social distance throughout a production to having, you know, individual catered meals that arrive, and from, you know, for people who have to actually fly to a set, buying up seats on an airline so they're able to social distance effectively. But of course, all of these measures come with a pretty hefty price tag, so it's unclear who's going to pay for all of this.
And it's worth noting that the vast majority of people who make their living in the film and TV industry are in fact not fabulously wealthy. They're like middle-class professionals. They make their living gig style. Do you see a lot of people potentially getting out of the business if this delay in production persists?
Well, I think it's a real risk that they might get out of the business. And I'm glad you made that point, because I think that people often think of Hollywood as a very elitist place, you know, a place with red carpet premieres and award shows and big studio, big star salaries and things like that. But the fact is, it's very much a blue collar industry. These folks are well compensated in some cases, but they're middle class. And so this kind of production shutdown has put an enormous strain on them. The question, though, is they may be unemployed right now, but what other industries are hiring? Where can they take their skills? And that's the issue that they're having right now.
So you mentioned that film sets and TV sets are quite compact as workspaces. On the other hand, a soundstage, I would imagine, is a relatively well-controlled environment. Where do you think the balance will be when you compare shooting on a soundstage versus shooting on location in the near future?
Well, I don't see productions resuming shooting on location anytime soon. I think they will shoot primarily on soundstages because they can make some effort to control sort of access to that space, and potentially on backlots. I live in New York City. I know that Steiner Studios, a major production hub here, is working on building out their backlot because they feel like it's going to be in so much demand when production does resume.
Will this shutdown affect the kinds of projects that get funded in the foreseeable future? Will studios be more risk averse than they have been?
I think that remains to be seen, but I would imagine it probably will make people risk averse. I think it will also impact some things, such as if you have a script that involves a lot of action choreography or a lot of intimate scenes, sex scenes. That's a lot riskier in the coronavirus era. And I think you could see a lot of that being cut back or figuring out kind of digital ways to do that. I mean, I've even heard people say that they're thinking about trying to figure out whether or not actors can kiss using CGI. So it's very, very weird territory and time right now.
What input have the unions had on the conditions under which their members might be expected to return to work?
Well, right now what's happening is all of the different constituencies are drafting white papers and talking about their concerns for what production will look like. In order for production to resume, most producers believe that they need to have a really skeletal crew. And that's somewhat of a delicate issue because unions have fought very hard to have certain staffing levels for their members so they can have them employed. So they're going to perhaps have to make some concessions in order for these productions to operate with a skeletal staff. And I think what unions' concern is that these concessions be temporary concessions and that the concessions will lift when the health crisis does.
How much content is typically in the pipeline at a given time? Like, are there a few months worth of movies and TV series that have been shot and are in the can just waiting to be edited?
My sense, and I'm not positive about this, is that there are more completed films available because when coronavirus hit, films by and large stopped getting major releases. So there's a whole backlog of these movies. Television is a different beast. As you mentioned in your intro, all of us have been binge watching an enormous number of shows right now. Well, we're rapidly kind of going through the library there. And I think fall television season, when a lot of new shows are supposed to be introduced, is going to look dramatically different. You could really be having a fall television season that happens in January as opposed to September or October.
And we've heard about declines in advertising revenues. This may sound to someone like you like a silly question, but why are companies pulling back on their ad expenditures just when people are watching more TV?
Well, I think the question is, I mean, first of all, these companies are facing their own financial issues in many cases, so they're not able to spend the kind of money they did advertising. Another issue is they're concerned that this crisis has left people with less disposable income, so that their sort of bang for the buck is going to be less if they advertise in this market. I mean, traditionally, the sort of the rule of thumb is that the strongest companies do continue to advertise in downtimes because you're kind of investing in your future. But when you look at the size and scale of the economic carnage because of this disease, that may just not be financially possible right now.
Are studios cutting executive jobs in order to stay afloat themselves?
They are cutting some executive jobs. There have been an enormous number of furloughs, particularly with studios that have some kind of live event component to their business, such as Disney with its theme parks and Comcast with its theme parks. There have been a number of pay cuts. Executives like Bob Iger at Disney and others have made kind of a big show of foregoing their salary, although, don't weep for them because they still get bonuses and stock options, and that's where the bulk of their compensation rests.
Presumably, the winner in all this is the streaming services. Has that proven to be true?
Yes, I think if there is a winner in all of this sort of tumult, it's probably a Netflix or a Disney Plus, which has grown in popularity. Unfortunately, the kind of the nature of media companies is that they are diversified. They are conglomerates. So even though Disney Plus is enjoying a lot of popular success, its parent company, Disney, has been particularly hard hit by the coronavirus because it is so dependent on live events and on the theatrical experience.
All right, let's talk about theaters. It's easy to overlook the fact that many people who make their living in the entertainment industry make their living by selling tickets or sweeping floors or making popcorn at your local movie theater. What will have to happen for people to feel safe going back into theaters?
Well, it's interesting because we have a little bit more clarity on this particular issue than we do on the production one, because states have sort of gradually allowed some theaters to reopen, states like Texas and Georgia, and some have actually moved forward. What we're sort of seeing is that they're developing new safety standards. So a lot of times it's extra cleaning. It's emphasizing the kinds of disinfectants they're using. It's putting up plexiglass in concession stands. It's encouraging people to place their orders online or buy tickets online so there's less contact. And it's social distance seating so that you're in a movie theater, but you're 6 feet apart from the other patrons. So far, there haven't been a lot of new releases, but a lot of the theaters, these are smaller circuits, report that they've seen, about attendance at about 25 to 35 to 30% of where it usually is at this time of year. That sounds like a huge drop, and it is, but it's not bad considering that what they're showing for the most part are things like The Goonies and Back to the Future. They're not, major movies. They're not Marvel movies.
So, do you imagine that theaters will just keep hanging on to blockbuster releases that are ready to go, or do you think that they will start releasing these to streaming services?
Well, that's a big question. And I think a lot of that will be known in July because currently that's when the two biggest new releases are supposed to come out, and that's Mulan and Christopher Nolan's Tenet. If those movies do go forward, if they are released, I think that you'll see studios start to put things back in theaters. If not, they'll experiment with streaming.
Brent Lang is my guest. He's executive editor of film and media, covering the major Hollywood studios and their corporate parents for Variety.
What are you doing? Are you in your cabin?
I am. I come up here to hunt meat so I don't have to go to the grocery store. I've built up about a 12-year supply of venison jerky. I can ship you some. You probably have to get your incisor teeth sharpened.
Ew, no. When you travel, are you practicing social distancing?
I've been practicing social distancing since I was 4 years old.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. That was a clip from a recent special episode of NBC's Parks and Recreation that aired in April. My guest this hour is Brent Lang, who is executive editor of film and media at Variety. We're talking about sports and entertainment in the age of COVID-19. The sports part will come a few minutes from now, but we are still with Brent Lang. Brent, there have been some sort of stunt episodes of things. Saturday Night Live did something. I think the unsinkable, unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt did special programming. How long will it be before we see other kinds of content, not sort of just made in a hurry, that reflects the situation that we're living through at the moment?
Well, I think we'll definitely see more of these sort of special episodes. And I think what you're seeing with Saturday Night Live and Parks and Rec and Stephen Sondheim's birthday celebration is that there's actually a real tolerance for kind of lo-fi production values, a sort of DIY approach to entertainment. Maybe we're just used to it now because all of us are spending so much more time on Zoom calls or something. So I think you'll definitely see a lot of that. In terms of whether or not coronavirus, our new kind of social distancing will be a reality, will be sort of reflected in popular entertainment, I suspect it will at some level, but what you might end up having is that that's kind of a subtextual level, almost like what happened after 9/11 when the superhero genre became enormously popular, because I think it had a kind of moral clarity that the world order at the time sort of lacked, so it became kind of an antidote to that. And you could have people be really looking for something that's more escapist. Maybe comedies or musicals or things like that will have a resurgence in this climate.
Has COVID-19 had a noticeable effect on traditional cable? Like, will the pandemic push forward the cut the cord trend that started several years ago?
Well, I think it definitely will. And it was a trend that was already happening, and this will only accelerate it. And it will only accelerate it for several reasons, one of which is there are more streaming options than ever before. Not only do you have Disney Plus and Netflix and Amazon Prime, but you have Apple has a streaming service now. HBO Max just launched. Peacock is about to launch. So there are more options to sort of do an a la carte way of assembling your entertainment diet. And then there's the issue of the economic catastrophe caused by COVID-19 and the fact that a lot of people have lost their jobs. Well, cable bills are extremely expensive. It's an easy place to cut if you're looking to economize.
Are streaming services competing in an even more difficult way to buy up rights for old content that could be repurposed? I mean, is there suddenly a market for things that were thought to be unusable or unsellable before?
I'm not sure. I think there will be more of a demand for that if production doesn't resume, because they'll need content. But right now, the emphasis is still on original programming, on new shows, on things that hook people. If you are a streaming service, it is absolutely essential for you to launch with a water cooler hit. You need a Mandalorian. You need a House of Cards. And if you look at sort of Apple Plus's failure to kind of really catch on, a lot of that has to do with the fact that its early programming did not really inspire a great deal of affection, a great deal of chatter.
I know you're a film and TV guy. I wonder if you know what this will all mean for live entertainment, concerts and theatrical events and festivals that kind of by nature can only work in front of a crowd.
I don't know as much about the concert business, but I do cover Broadway. And I do think that this is a catastrophe for that business. Mm-hmm. I don't really see it coming back in a big way until there's a vaccine, particularly the theater business. You know, a lot of that takes place in very old venues. It's almost impossible to make the economics work where people are social distancing. And I just don't think, I don't think people are going to take the risk. And I know they say that theaters might open, that the live event theaters may open in places like New York in September. I don't believe that. I think you're looking at 2021, and really you're looking at a vaccine or some kind of treatment for the disease before people are really willing to do that.
Are you seeing people in that business grieving for more than just their livelihood, but for the art form, at least for the foreseeable future?
Oh, of course. I mean, I think we're all grieving. And I think that definitely they are, because you get into this business because if you're in the theater business, you don't really do it to make a lot of money. It's a very, very hard business, and there's a very limited chance of success. You do it because you love your art, you love your craft, and you love this idea of a communal experience of bringing people together and sharing something, sharing some message with them, message of hope or uplift. Well, right now, you know, that's not just impossible, it's dangerous. And I think people feel like a way of life has been lost, at least temporarily.
How are you using your viewing time these days? I imagine you're having to watch less to sort of really understand what's brand new. What are you doing with your time?
Well, I signed up for the Criterion Channel, and I recommend that to folks. It's kind of been a film education for me, watching all the foreign films and classic films that I should have watched and never somehow got around to. Well, this is a perfect time to catch up on them now.
Brent Lang is executive editor covering film and media and Hollywood studios for Variety. He also covers Broadway. Brent, thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to switch gears now to talk about how the pandemic has gutted another major source of entertainment, sports. Fans have faced major disruptions to baseball, basketball, even golf schedules, and the 2020 Summer Olympics will actually take place in 2021. One bright spot last week, the National Hockey League announced players will return to the ice for a modified season that will play out more like a tournament. Here's NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman.
When the given go-ahead from the medical experts and the relevant government authorities is given, 24 of our 31 teams will resume play, the top 12 in each conference as ranked by percentage points from our standings as they stood through the games of March 11th when we paused our season as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. The remaining seven teams will enter the draft lottery, which I will discuss in detail later. For purposes of nomenclature, record keeping and NHL awards, the 2019-20 regular season has been deemed to be completed.
Still, players across the sports landscape have reservations. After all, they are the ones putting their health on the line to perform. Here's Mike Trout of the Los Angeles Angels.
You know, being quarantined in a city, you know, I was reading, you know, if we play, you know, a couple months, it'd be difficult, you know, for some guys. You know, people, what are you going to do with family members? My wife is pregnant. What am I going to do when, you know, she goes into labor? Am I going to have to quarantine for 2 weeks after I come back? Because, you know, obviously I can't miss that, you know, birth of our first child. So there's a lot of red flags. There's a lot of questions. Obviously we would have to agree on it as players. But I think the mentality is we want to get back as soon as we can. But obviously, it's got to be realistic. You know, we can't be sitting in our hotel rooms and, you know, just going from the field to the hotel room and not being able to do anything. I think that's just, I think that's pretty crazy.
So will it be any good to watch on TV without spectators surrounding the action at the rink? What does occupational safety look like when contact is your profession and that makes social distancing impossible? And what have diehard sports fans been doing with their time since live events dried up? Tom Goldman is here to talk about all of this. He is sports correspondent for NPR. Tom, welcome to Think.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
This all sounds really complicated.
It sure does. What, you want an easy answer for me?
Sure. You got one?
No, I don't.
So
it seems incredibly complicated, but you know, these leagues are moving on. As soon as Thursday, with the NBA Board of Governors meeting and voting, we should know that the NBA will be starting up in late July. And you know, you mentioned the NHL, although they don't have a time date, a date when they'll return. The, you know, MLS, Major League Soccer, is talking about late June, as is the NWSL, the Women's Pro Soccer League. And then the NFL. NFL is sitting pretty right now because they're just able to keep saying, well, we're going to be back as scheduled September 10th. Hmm. But that could change. You notice though, that I haven't said anything about a startup with Major League Baseball, which I think a lot of people are waiting to hear. And they still don't know. They are locked in what appear to be some fairly contentious talks about salary, which doesn't go over very well right now.
So are the teams looking to pay players less because they're performing for fewer games?
Yeah, that is the thing. It's more difficult for Major League Baseball since it never got going. I mean, the pandemic shut things down during spring training. So we haven't seen any, you know, regular season Major League Baseball games. So there's a lot more to negotiate, a lot more potentially could be lost. Whereas the NBA and the NHL were well through their seasons. They were cruising to their playoffs. And so their potential revenue losses would be a different thing. I think a lot of people are, you know, looking to excoriate Major League Baseball players and owners for haggling over this stuff. But there's a lot on the line to lose here. And, you know, careers are short. And there's also concern, especially among Major League Baseball players, that whatever is negotiated right now, contract-wise, could spill over into, you know, certainly next season and seasons going forward.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. How important is ticket revenue specifically to Major League Baseball teams as compared with the money they take in from TV deals?
Well, Major League Commissioner Rob Manfred says it's around 40% of the revenues they bring in. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And it is informing these contract negotiations right now, because the two sides, the owners and players, are haggling over how many games they should actually play when and if Major League Baseball starts up again. The players want more because they think they can actually make more money with more games. The owners want fewer games at this point because they think with fewer games they will lose less money. So complicated kinds of stuff, but it is interesting. I mean, we've heard a lot about TV deals, as we should in recent years, because TV deals put millions and billions of dollars into these leagues. But you know, it's still important to get people to the games.
Is there some way they could make up some of that money by selling more like pro boxing style pay-per-view?
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't know if that would go at this point, because we are, other than, you know, cable subscriptions, people are used to getting, not having to, you know, pay like a pay-per-view situation for their baseball games, you know? And so that might be tough to do. There is talk of having, if you have a shorter season, you could make up some of the losses with revenue generating events like a home run derby, which we see at the Major League Baseball, connected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game.
You know, people might be saying, we have a lot of really challenging problems in this country now. And it's tempting, I think, for some people to look at sports as something that is somewhat frivolous or unnecessary. On the other hand, it seems like sports is one of the last things we have in this country that has the ability to bring people together across every possible divide that exists here.
It is. And, you know, there's been a lot said about the, you know, the psychic help that bringing sports back would provide. And certainly this country needs a lot of psychic help, I think, at this point. You know, not only we've been dealing with a pandemic, but then the last week with what's been going on in the aftermath of the death of George Floyd in, Minneapolis. You know, I was thinking about this, Chris, another interesting kind of reason to bring back sports. There are some saying, you know, let's just shut it all down. But one of the reasons to bring it back is athletes, you may or may not have noticed, have been very outspoken during this last week. Athletes, we, you know, perhaps are surprised to hear speaking out about politics, Black and white athletes. And if sports are back in session, with you know, with the country going the way it is, it would be very interesting, because I think you would see a lot more athletes using their platform, microphones in front of their face, if they do allow reporters to put microphones in front of their face because of the pandemic, who would speaking out a lot more about our country, which I think serves an important purpose.
Do you think that would put more pressure on team owners to actually listen to what they have to say, as opposed to sort of caving to fans who were offended by a Colin Kaepernick type demonstration?
It's a balancing act, because, you know, before starting in 2016, when Colin Kaepernick started taking a knee during the playing of the national anthem before games, it was pretty much him and a few others. There were, you know, supportive athletes in lots of different sports, but you are seeing a response now that I would say is unprecedented. You know, just the numbers of athletes who are speaking out, the numbers of team executives, it's pretty profound. And so, in answer to your question, it would be more of a balancing act. I think in the past, it's, you know, NFL owners listened primarily to the fans and to the, and, you know, what the fans were doing with their pocketbooks. But I think with, you know, with so many athletes getting involved, it's something that owners have to pay attention to.
My guest is Tom Goldman, sports correspondent for NPR. We're talking about sports in the age of COVID-19. This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour with sports correspondent for NPR, Tom Goldman, about sports in the age of COVID-19. I want to get to the ethics here, Tom. It's understood that professional athletes take on a certain amount of physical risk every time they take the field. They can be tripped or tackled or hit with a ball or a puck, or they can wrench a knee or a shoulder. Sometimes these are career-ending injuries. What's different about asking athletes to take a certain amount of risk of getting COVID-19 when they play?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I think the difference is that, you know, the possibility of contracting the coronavirus and COVID-19 is not part of being an athlete. It never has been. Whereas all of those are considered, you know, hazards of the job. This is not. And this is something that has to be factored in. You know, we talked before the break, certainly, about all the economic haggling that's going on, especially in baseball. But rest assured that that there's a lot of talk as well about protecting these players, trying to protect them in all leagues. And it's a risk. It will be a risk, and they all know that. And so, you know, I think that's one of the reasons the baseball players want to be compensated as fairly as possible, because they are taking a greater risk. There are, of course, greater risks for different sports. Baseball, the sport we have been talking about, naturally is perhaps less risky. You know, with a lot of the games played at in open air stadiums, and the actual, you know, there's a lot of natural social distancing, and the way players are positioned around a diamond. And there's not normally contact like there is in hockey and football. I mean, those are potentially very risky if you talk about transmitting the virus.
So the NBA is, basketball is a pretty high contact sport. The NBA is looking into quarantining everybody in Las Vegas, which is pretty much empty now, and doing a tournament?
Well, actually, no. The plan that NBA owners reportedly, I'm sorry, NBA, the Board of Governors reportedly will approve has to do with everyone locating in Orlando. At the Disney World. Yeah, at one point it was down to Orlando and Las Vegas, but Orlando presents a really unique kind of bubble-like experience. Everything on, at the Disney World complex, the ESPN Wide World of Sports Disney World complex, it fits neatly too because Disney owns ESPN, which has a whopping contract with the NBA. So that all, you know, fits together nicely. And so the idea would be to allow players to at least start their training at training facilities around the country, which have been opening up. And then they would fly into Orlando. I believe that the idea would be to quarantine them for a couple of weeks before things get going. So that would be all neat and tidy. Under the protection of Mickey and Minnie Mouse.
So a nerd like me knows that ESPN occasionally covers things like the National Spelling Bee, but there's not a whole lot of those happening. What do you do if you're ESPN and there are no live sports happening?
Yeah, and especially now that The Last Dance is over. The Last Dance captivated basketball fans for about 5 weeks, the 10-part documentary on Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. Well, you hope and pray that you've only got about a month more to go, and then you can actually start broadcasting things live. There have been some things they've tried to do live. You know, NASCAR is back, although for a limited run, although that was Fox Sports that was broadcasting that. And you know, you have some other, you know, really kind of niche esoteric sports such as cornhole. People who've ever been to a backdoor barbecue love the sport of cornhole. Well, it's actually, I believe it's broadcast on ESPN. And then, you know, Chris, there's just a lot of yakking, and they do a really good job of that. You know, the sports debate shows, and you know, so they've been getting a lot of mileage out of, you know, whether or not to open leagues and this or that, and the ethics of all that. So, you know, they've been able to fill with classic games as well. But you know, I think sports fans are a little restless to see the real deal.
How different will the experience of playing in an empty stadium be for athletes?
Well, for athletes, it'll be weird. You know, I talked to one American baseball player, pitcher, who is playing in the South Korean League, the KBO, KBO, Korean Baseball Organization. And he was talking about some games they had early on before they started their regular season a couple of weeks ago. And he said it drove him crazy because he said he actually asked, you know, stadium officials if they could pipe in some music because it was just dead. And players, you know, a lot of times it sounds like they're giving lip service. Oh, we've got the best fans. We love the fans. They really do feed off the fans. And you know, this we're talking about a baseball game. In sports like basketball and hockey, where it's a much more intimate connection, fans are much closer, and the arenas are packed in. I think that they'll really miss that. Not just the noise generated, but just the, you know, the intensity. There's so much talk about having a home court advantage, home field advantage. Well, with no fans, that kind of goes out the door.
And the TV experience will be different as well. Even just the sort of cutaways that we're accustomed to seeing while we're watching a game will be unavailable.
Yeah, it will be. And it is. It will be very strange. You know, I watched a little of the KBO and they, you know, what I was noticing is they were trying to make shots as tight as possible You know, so you didn't have to show the empty stands, but it's unavoidable a lot of the time. And so, yeah, it will be strange. I think there's a belief that let's just get the sports back on TV and all will be good. It'll be better, but it's still going to be a strange experience for both player and fan.
For some people, the thrill of sports is enhanced by a bit of wagering. What are people betting on at the moment?
You know, you can talk about the great potential or lack thereof of the human spirit when you think of all the things that are possible to bet on. But you know, you've heard people, you know, betting on things like the program Top Chef or Survivor. I was reading that one of the draft or one of the gambling websites was back when we were having Democratic presidential debates, they were placing wagers on that as far as, okay, which candidate will mention the coronavirus first, or how many times will President Trump tweet during the Democratic debate. So, you know, I've heard of people wagering on the weather, how high a temperature will get in a certain locale. So, you know, there's plenty to keep people busy and to keep them from like doing constructive things like reading a book. You know?
my husband and my sons have been known to watch other people playing video games. Will we see more of this as a placeholder for sports?
I don't know. Yeah, well, actually, yeah, there was. I mean, when things were getting particularly desperate about a month ago, we actually watched NBA players play a popular NBA video game. I'm sorry. With all due respect to your husband and son, I can't fathom that. So,
what about college athletics? I mean, sports are a huge source of revenue for a lot of schools. And yet these athletes are not compensated in the way professionals are. Do you see colleges taking a cue from pro sports in how they make decisions about going back?
Well, college is forging ahead. As of Monday, as of yesterday, it became legal, I guess you could say, or they okayed college athletes coming back to campus for quote unquote voluntary workouts. And I put that in quotation marks because when you say voluntary, when it pertains to sports, that means you better be there. So they are allowed to come back. And, you know, I think college officials are dreading what happens if things progress to the point that they will have to cancel or greatly alter the football season. Football is a huge economic driver in college sports. But beyond that, beyond the economics, much more important, obviously, is the athletes themselves. And the president of the NCAA, Mark Emmert, has said, you know, there will not be sports on campus unless there are students on campus. Mm. But they are starting to bring students back as of yesterday. And this month, several prominent conferences will start allowing, like the SEC in the South and the Pac-12 in the West, around June 15th, June 8th, will start allowing these athletes back. And frankly, athletes are a little concerned. You mentioned they don't get compensated. They're also not unionized. So there's no one really to protect them, no one to really look out and see if all these great guidelines that are being put forth are going to be adhered to. You talk to college athlete advocates, and they will say the NCAA has a long and sorry history of not taking care of the health and safety of the young men and women who play sport. And there are athletes worried about this, college athletes worried about this. They're worried about what will happen as far as enforcing guidelines. And for those athletes who don't want to come back, who may have some pre-existing health conditions that make it a greater risk for them to come back and partake in sports, what will happen to their scholarships? They're worried about that. So these are things we're definitely watching for.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Do you think, Tom, that this could be an opportunity to shift some of that? People have been talking for years about maybe needing to be a little more honest about what college athletes do for their universities and how they might be fairly compensated without breaking any rules.
Yeah, I think it might. I think like the pandemic is going to change a lot of things, Chris, in society. I think this may be another element of that. You know, already there was momentum toward that. There has been momentum toward compensation, the name, image, and likeness issue, the legislation that happened in California could be happening in Florida next, which allows athletes to be paid for the use of their name, image, and like that, name, image, and likeness. That's a step toward, you know, full compensation. Full compensation paying athletes will never happen. I really don't think that will happen, certainly in our lifetimes. But, you know, as far as seeing the need to compensate athletes in some way, when they're out there doing the work that is generating enormous dollars, both for institutions and for individual coaches. So I think with all these concerns coming out and coming to a head, you may actually see that momentum will continue once the, you know, the pandemic is brought under control, whatever they're saying.
Without live crowds, does all play-by-play announcing start to sound like the Masters?
No. I mean, you know, in that not everyone's going to whisper, but you'll still see, hear announcers becoming very excited. Of course, it's funny. I was mentioning watching the Korean baseball. It's very funny to hear, you know, announcers get really excited, and then just you can hear a pin drop after they get excited. Matter of fact, I watched one game where they got excited, and you can hear one person clapping in the background for a play. So, you know, it's all the new normal that we're all talking about, and you know, we'll adjust. I think people will adjust. It's weird, but at least it would be live sports, and sports fans love that.
Quickly, before I let you go, the summer 2020 Olympics have officially, I believe, been pushed back to 2021. How optimistic are you that 2021 will happen?
Well, hopeful, but, you know, even Japanese organizing, Tokyo Organizing Committee, the chairman is saying, you know, we're hoping it works, but we may not have this thing under control by then. So the CEO of the Tokyo Organizing Committee said, we're certainly not in a position to give you a clear answer, in answer to what you just asked. I think a lot of athletes are planning, you know, they've rejiggered their training schedules. So instead of a 4-year cycle, it's now a 5-year cycle. They're training for next July and hopeful. But like everything with this virus, we just don't know.
Tom Goldman is sports correspondent for NPR. Tom, thanks so much for making time for us.
It was a pleasure being with you.
You can like our page on Facebook. We're also on Twitter at KERA Think. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for KERA Think. Listen as well on our website if you prefer. That is think.kera.org. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.